We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, 6 straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 492. Today, we're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. It's been like a week-ish since the Yankees exited the playoffs. We took a few days off. I don't know if you've been watching baseball, Scott. I certainly haven't. How you feeling?
I have not been watching much baseball. I'm going to be very honest. I watched highlights. I've been checking the scores to see, you know, what's going on, making sure that the Astros are not going to advance. That's been the really. I'm just looking. Did the Astros lose? That's all.
I've gone 180 on that.
That's all I've been looking.
I kind of want them to beat the Rays now. I know they're not going to, but man, Braves versus Rays is a boring ass World Series.
I mean, would you watch it if it was Dodgers Astros?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Because that is a great storyline. That's the whole offseason was leading up to Astros versus either the Yankees or the Dodgers. The Yankees didn't have the balls to get there to face them. Maybe the Dodgers will. I really think baseball needs some storylines because otherwise it's so boring and vanilla, and the Yankees are out. The Cubs are out. The who else? You know, the other good teams. The Red Sox sucked this year. Like all the big market teams with some juice are out. The Astros are there as like the WWF villains, and they're actually playing into it now. I think they kind of are playing into it. They're using it as fuel. They're probably still going to lose against the Rays. I just think Dodgers Astros would be an interesting storyline. You can't really lose with the result of that. The Dodgers finally, you know, got revenge for their 17 loss, or the Astros win in spite of everybody in this bullshit season. I think that would be great for baseball, but it's going to be Rays versus Braves probably,
and no one's going to watch.
Well, I mean, the Dodgers are only down a game right now. It's 2-1.
That's true. So. And they just scored like a billion runs.
Yeah, they scored 11 runs in the first inning against the Braves. So I mean, I could see.
Yeah, you're right. It could be Dodgers Rays.
If we're looking at baseball wise, like the Dodgers Rays is definitely the best series. I think Braves Rays, although not sexy, is interesting just because there's a lot of unknowns there. So I think a lot of people could watch that series and like and find some players that they haven't watched before and be pleasantly surprised. I just don't know if they're going to actually get to that point and turn the channel to TBS or, you know, wherever it's being broadcasted on that given day because they see Braves Rays.
Right. And like from a baseball perspective, maybe, but I don't really care about from a baseball perspective at this point, like, oh, the quality of the baseball being played. I just think from a national perspective, the storyline of Dodgers Astros would be fun and would get some national attention because the Astros story got a lot of national attention in the offseason.
Yeah, I just don't want the Astros to get any national attention that has any kind of positive tone to it at all. So
how would that be positive?
Because they advanced through the American League now after the cheating thing. So I do want them to lose. I want them to lose very badly. They need to lose, in fact.
Does the Rays beating them satisfy anything?
Yes, it does. It satisfies the fact that they did not make the World Series. And that's what I need. I only need that. That's really not much. The fact is if they make the World Series, they can say, okay, well, clearly we didn't cheat this year and made the World Series, so it doesn't matter. It's just another opportunity for them to throw some dirt.
They made the ALCS. Didn't they kind of prove their point?
Nah.
They made it to a Final Four. They're a Final Four team.
It's different.
But for the fourth straight year.
They beat Oakland. Billy Bean was still there at that point.
They beat Oakland, but Oakland won their division. So nobody knows who won their own division.
Nobody remembers.
Yankees couldn't beat the team that won their division.
No, nobody will remember who won that division ever. They will only see that the Astros beat the Oakland Athletics, and the Oakland Athletics are not a team that like will get you beyond that.
Hump. They went through the Twins and the Athletics, right. Two notorious postseason losers.
There you go.
But I still think that they went farther than people would. They were a below 500 team this year. They were a better team than their record showed.
Load management. So they were in a similar position.
Yeah, a lot of mental things got in the way of their performance this year. And also, like, 53% of the league made the playoffs. So I think they probably just coasted in, like sort of the Yankees did. But I think they kind of proved their point by being a Final Four team.
Yankees are
in a Final Four team?
I don't think that anybody on the baseball side of things who actually has watched this game thought that the Astros players themselves, especially the offense, like, and those guys were bad baseball players. I think that the majority of people who watch the game and know the game understand that George Springer, take that the whole cheating scandal out of the equation. Altuve, same thing. Bregman, same thing. They're good baseball players. With that or without that, they're still there. They're still, you know, top baseball players. So they didn't need to prove that to a lot of people. It's the storylines and the fact that you need to just soak in it and just like be dirty. That's what I need. I don't need any kind of cleansing with this. And if they don't make the World Series, to me, the casual baseball fan, the storylines, they're dead. That's it. It still goes back to them not being able to do anything.
Don't you think that's a problem? Storyline's dying.
No. The storyline with the Houston Astros making the World Series is dead. Because that's the national storyline. It's not the fact that they made the ALCS. It's the fact that they would make the World Series and get that attention. That needs to not happen.
Do you think baseball lacks storylines? Because we haven't had a repeat World Series winner since the Yankees in 1999-2000. There has been a different World Series winner every single season for the past 20 years. I know the Giants had a little bit of a run where they went every other year, so some people called them a dynasty, but I'm sorry. If you don't even make the playoffs in between World Series championships, I have a hard time calling you a dynasty. The Astros were kind of poised to be a dynasty, but they haven't won after 17, and now that 17 championship is tainted. So the Red Sox have gone through periods where they're a World Series winner and then a last place team. So as far as like a storyline, sort of like a top dog in baseball, it seems to change every year. You can't call the Yankees the top dog. They haven't made the World Series in a decade.
The Dodgers are close to having a Buffalo Bills record.
Right.
The
Dodgers have been the class of the NL for almost 10 years, and they haven't won a championship. So do you think baseball lacks storylines?
I mean, if you're talking about just storyline, the way that you're talking about it right now is a championship storyline, a dominant team storyline, a Chicago Bulls Jordan storyline, Yankees dominant storyline. So if that's the case, then yes,
but
it's spread up. But the nature of the luxury tax and the systems that they've been trying to implement have the reason they've been doing that is because they want parity. They want the spread of the wealth.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's good. I'm not sure that's good for the league. Look at basketball. It's basically what team is LeBron on,
right?
Because that team is in the finals. In football, it's been the Patriots for 20 years. Everyone trying to knock off the Patriots. And I think that draws attention.
It gives you a bad guy.
It gives you a bad guy. And it also gives you the common fan to be like, oh, every year, like that LeBron James guy is always there every year. Let me find out what he's doing this year. Oh, he went to the Lakers and he won on the Lakers? Huh. Okay. Where it's like, oh, the Kansas City Royals won. Oh, and then the Giants won. And then the Red Sox won. And then the Astros won. The Cubs won. That was cool. That was a cool storyline for baseball.
Story
but guess
line.
What? Guess what? Now that storyline's dead. They broke their curse. That's dead. The Red Sox broke their curse. That storyline is dead. So like these storylines, there's no buildup in baseball. Like I think if the Cubs had not won in 2016, got really close, and then maybe got close again in 17, got close again in 18, and we're just like on the precipice every year. That would have been a better storyline for baseball.
Yeah, I just don't think any storyline like that, though, has such staying power that you're kind of wanting.
Maybe I'm wishing for something that's not realistic because baseball's not ever going to be the top sport in the country anymore.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it's very, like you mentioned the Patriots as an example for this. Like that's taken a very long time for that to happen. That's happened over time because of sustained success on one side of things.
Of course.
That's very difficult to do. It's not an easy thing to do. The Yankee storyline happened because it was a very long stretch of winning within a relatively short amount of time, 10 years, you know, in the 90s,
totally.
Early 2000s.
But I think maybe if the Astros made the World Series, if the Astros make the World Series this year, if they come back from 3-0 against the Rays, which I don't think is going to happen, the Rays pitching is just too good. That would be a better story for baseball as a whole than if they lose in the ALCS.
Does it kill that story now? Whereas it could continue it next year because now the Astros are going to be facing the fans for the first time and going back into these stadiums now with people.
Well, see, I think them facing fans as a World Series representative or even World Series championship, that's awesome drama. That's awesome theater. That is straight out of WWF. Villainous guy. Like, oh, you think I cheat? Well, I'm gonna win and spit in your face. Like, I don't know. Give me the villain next year.
I mean, they're still
the villain. But it's like it's neutered. It's so old at that point. It's almost 2 years, two calendar years. It's a year and a half of calendar gone
so
by.
So you're saying winning regurgitates or brings it back to the fold.
Brings the hatred back to the absolute pinnacle. Last January.
But when someone has something, a crutch to rely on, like for instance, when the Red Sox won, Yankees fans couldn't use the same narrative anymore. We couldn't say anything. Couldn't chant 1918. Couldn't chant the things that we had.
So you actually see what you're saying.
You're now the words out of your mouth that you're going to spew at them don't make sense anymore because they just did it, without the cheating. So now
we can throw this bullshit year in their face, but maybe make the World Series and lose to the Dodgers. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make a difference. I just think for many people, they're going to go to Astros Yankees games next year and boo the hell out of them. I'm probably going to be one of them. But I'm not going to lie to myself and say it's the same hatred I would have had if we had them in the stadium this year, this May.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not. It's so long ago.
Okay.
So much has happened.
I'm just going to feed you 7 beers before the game and we'll see what happens. That's it. We'll just see what happens.
Seven's not the right number to get me yelling at
seven, I think. Seven, I think, in an hour and a half pregame is just fine.
Okay.
So, all right, tough guy. I think it's just fine.
Oh, I was going to say less. Like, I think, like, while I'm drinking my fourth beer.
Oh, no. I want you passed out by the fourth. I want you giving it all by the fourth, up to like the third, fourth inning. I just want you at peak, you know, for innings 1 and 2. That's it.
Do you have any? We're going to talk about the press conferences and all that stuff in this episode. But do you have any lingering thoughts? We did like an hour long therapy session the night that they lost. But you've had some time to reflect on it. I've had some time to reflect on it. And I think I have some some more takeaways from the ALDS. What about you?
Yeah, it was. So I've been looking at just what social media is saying, the fan base, you know, coming out of that as well, and identifying like, why did this happen? Why did the Yankees lose? What were the reasons the Yankees lost? And you could say a couple of different things. One, you could say that the pitching put them in a bad position, you know, in total for the team to have to be perfect in certain moments. Hmm. Or you could say that, similar to 2019, at the end of the day, while the pitching was a problem, the offense is actually the one that failed you in the very end at the buzzer, because that is what happened in 2019. Yankees couldn't get the big hit, couldn't get the job done, whereas like the very uncertain pitching actually pitched well in a game that was ready to oust you. And similarly in this case, it happened again. Yankees couldn't get the big hit, couldn't tack on a few more runs, and it ended up being to their detriment, because the pitching had to be absolutely perfect for too long.
Well, if you had to say which one is a bigger problem for the Yankees, what would you say it is? The lack of starting pitching on this team, or the inconsistent offense that seems to disappear in key postseason series?
They're both big problems. I think the pitching, when you look at what happened with game two and game three, it set them up where they had to be perfect again in games four and five. And they did it in game four. Game five, they ran into a buzzsaw every single inning with a very, very rested and talented Tampa Bay Devil Ray bullpen. So
can you call them the Devil Rays when they beat you in the postseason?
I want to. Maybe I
can't.
Doesn't
feel right, does it?
See, this is exactly why. If they win, you can't say shit anymore. So I think that
the
pitching set them up for the offense to almost have to be too perfect. And when that happens, that's when this team, I think, gets exploited even more, because they try to do too much, or they try to, you know, they rely on the long ball. And if there's a you know, rested and ready to go pitching staff, or a ace type pitcher like Gerrit Cole last year, who could come in and shut you down, you're in trouble. But it started with the pitching, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, I think I agree with you overall, because I think that game two is a pivot point for the Yankees in the ALDS.
If you get rid of game two and forget what happened there, just say that they lost. Game three was even bigger. The fact that Tanaka came out and shit the bed was a big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
In a perfect world, you know, if they stopped doing all the fancy stuff with game two and Tanaka, you put game three in game two.
Yeah. I mean, if Tanaka sucks in game two and he just starts and he gives up five runs,
like flip those games. Like, are we angry angry about the situation in game two? Probably not.
No. That's a good point. And we're probably just saying, damn, this team has Gerrit Cole and that's it. You can't win a World Series if you just have one starting pitcher. And that's I think is definitely a takeaway, but that's not like a revolutionary thing that we just figured out in the playoffs. We knew going in.
No, but I think a lot of people are trying to like really just lean on this game two shenanigans, where in fact, the result of what happened, the way that the series played out, it actually, like, you know, in some capacity, maybe it had an effect on the series. But if you put Tanaka in that game, the guy that everybody was agreed upon that should be in that game, or, you know, Monday morning quarterback that Tanaka would be in that game, he still sucked too. So if they did that weird stuff in game three, you'd be like, okay, yeah, they're trying to get by. They're like, they should actually at this point, because they don't have that pitching.
Do you know what the irony of Tanaka having a bad playoffs this year was? He really did not pitch well in his two starts in the playoffs. And it made it so his stats, his postseason career stats, are now almost identical to his regular season career stats.
The 500, it goes back to,
it's just
maybe
his ERA,
today, maybe not.
His ERA, his FIP, like all of those stats are within like a 10% difference of his regular season, which I've been saying for a long time, just because Tanaka has a 1.7 ERA in the playoffs doesn't mean he's a 1.7 ERA pitcher. It means he's had good postseason starts. It doesn't mean he will continue to have. He's a solid starting pitcher. He's never been anything more than that since his elbow injury.
But
in 2014, he was a dominant starting pitcher. Then he had an elbow injury, and he's never been a dominant starting pitcher since then.
So
he's been a good starting pitcher.
The numbers that you're saying, though, like you, they're all, you look at the macro, you pull back and you can get a numbers that should tell you some data, but they really don't, because you're looking at the regular season, which is a lot of games mashed together, and then you're looking at the postseason, which is a smaller sample size, but it's a good amount that you can get, but it's also stretched across however many years. So it's
exactly,
it's,
yeah,
it doesn't really tell you the full story.
No, because if Madison Bumgarner goes into the playoffs this year, he's going to go in with that unbelievable track record.
Right.
But no one's like, oh, he's going to pitch 9 shutout innings this year in the postseason because he's not a good pitcher anymore.
Right. But in 10 years, those numbers that you're talking about that are now looking more like the regular season numbers are going to be looked at differently.
Hmm. So I think I had a realization after thinking about the series. So would you agree that the Rays are a team whose sum is greater than its parts?
Like Captain Planet?
I don't know who Captain Planet is.
You don't know who Captain Planet is? Holy shit. Yeah.
Who's Captain Planet?
It's all the kids together. We are now, with our powers combined, we are Captain Planet.
Is this something that like Kemp is watching? Like,
no, it's a cartoon from like, I don't know, the 90s, I guess. I thought everybody knew who Captain Planet was. Apparently not.
I went straight in the 90s. I went straight from watching like Thomas the Train Engine to watching SportsCenter.
Okay.
Like, there was no in between.
So Captain Planet is a number of kids that have different skill sets, and when combined they are a very
like
powerful
are they like the Power Rangers? I watched the Power Rangers.
Yeah, but the Power Rangers were always just the Power Rangers. They were still a team. Like Captain Planet like became Captain Planet. Like, you gotta have our powers.
So the Rays are Captain Planet.
With their powers combined, they are an ultimate force.
Do you think, so on the flip side, conversely, I think the Yankees are a roster that is less than the sum of its parts.
So you're saying the individual accolades are higher than the team in general.
You pick out anyone in that Yankees lineup. Wow, look at his OBP. Look at his WRC+. Wow, Luke Voit led the league in homers.
Isn't that the problem with analytics?
Yeah, I think it is a problem with analytics.
It's one of the big problems with analytics.
If the pieces don't fit together, then you're not going to win a World Series. You're going to win a lot of regular season games because you play so many bad teams in the regular season, and over a long stretch of time with volume, you will get the results you're looking for. But on a 5-game ALDS versus the Tampa Rays, you might not get the results. You're probably not going to get the results.
One of the fundamental problems with relying on choosing players or going purely based off analytics is exactly that. The sample size that you're looking at is macro. You have to have a larger sample size to get the data that you need to actually make a decision about a player. Now what you're doing is you're taking that data from a player that is spread over time, and you're dropping them in the middle of a short series and expecting the same average results or close to it.
Against the most elite starting pitching or relief pitching in the league. So I think that the Boone and Cashman were asked about righty-lefty balance in the lineup a bunch. And Boone said, oh, in a perfect world, you'll have that balance. Because the Yankees, you look up and down the lineup, and eight of their 9 starters are right-handed hitters. And optically, that doesn't look like balance. But I think they're missing the point. I don't think it's about balance lefty-righty hitters. Because if the left-handed hitters do the same thing as the right-handed hitters, you're still going to have the same problem. If you find a left-handed hitter that all he does is walk, strike out, and hit home runs, guess what? You're in the same position. You need diversity of players. The Yankees don't have enough diverse players. They have too many of the exact same hitter, where all they do is try and hit home runs, they strike out a crap ton, and they will get their fair share of walks. So when it comes time to get a hit with first and third, or put bat on ball to move a runner over, it's not going to happen often enough to win in the postseason. That, I think, is their problem. Their roster is not diverse. Their roster is so much filled with the same type of talent, which is good talent. I'm not denying it's not good talent, but they don't do enough things to win games.
The point about the righty-lefty stuff is that you have to find
You got to find the right players.
The correct righty-lefty matchups as well. If you can do that and you can show pitchers a little bit of a different look, and they're not seeing the same right-handed batter coming in where they can just destroy them with a backdoor, cutter that hits that goes on their hands every single time, then yeah, it can be a positive in the moment. Again, when you're looking at these moments, like, yeah, maybe there's a guy that's not or has similar numbers. It's a righty lefty. But when you put them in a postseason opportunity and you have the balance of that lineup where you have to now make the decision on the opposing manager for them to either keep a guy in or not, give them different looks, have a lefty being able to see the ball coming out of a righty's hand on a given night a little differently, there are positives in a smaller sample set. So I do think that it should have more balance. I don't think it's ideal to have an all righty lineup at all, because if you come into a hot righty, hard throwing pitcher, it's going to be hard to get a lot of runs. It just is.
Right. But don't you agree that if two more of these right-handed hitters were a little bit more focused on contact and less focused on the three true outcomes, that this lineup would be fine?
I mean, I could say the same thing as well, though, if you inserted a left-handed batter that had a different, it is more on the style for
yes,
sure.
A left-handed batter that was also those things I just said, not focused on home runs, strikeouts, walks. If you find a left-handed yes. hitter, I'm trying to think of an example of a left-handed hitter in baseball today that I don't know.
Jacoby Ellsbury was a guy that they thought was going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, but
if you
look
just
at
find
the guy,
another
you look
left-handed
at the
hitter, if you just make
people
G
keep
or
saying
Shella,
Michael Brantley, I've heard Michael Brantley a lot,
but he does things that a lot of people in this Yankees lineup doesn't do. If you just made Gio Urshela, or if you just made Luke Voit a left-handed hitter, but everything else was the same, this lineup has the same issues. It looks better on paper. You can go righty, switch, lefty, righty, lefty, righty. Oh, great. Yeah, we're balanced. No, guess what? Same hitters.
Yeah, no. I agree with that. You still need to directly... You have to make an impact with their style.
Yes. So I think that is one of my key takeaways. And that gets back to your point that the offense failed them in the postseason pretty much four straight years. Like, yes, they've had a lack of starting pitching for 4 years, but they didn't win against the Astros in 2017, not because the Astros were cheating. It's because they went like 1-for-80 with runners in scoring position in that series against the Astros. That's why they lost the 2017 ALCS. 2018 ALCS, I mean, they just got wiped the floor with by the Red Sox. They didn't pitch well. They didn't hit well. They didn't do anything well. 2019, yeah, they had Chad Green starting an elimination game, which is not ideal. And they had Jay Happ coming in relief in a key game two situation. Not ideal. But they also missed big opportunity after big opportunity. But that's what happens in the playoffs. Offense disappears because you're facing elite starting pitching. So unless you have elite pitching of your own, you're probably not going to win.
Right. No, I mean, it's true. But that's the thing. Like, when you have an offense that is put to a test and consistently has to bail you out, they're going, the percentages are there. They tell you that's not sustainable, especially in a playoff series against the best pitching, especially when Tampa is in a game four, not even throwing their best guys. They're waiting. They're holding them back.
Yeah, they had confidence going into game five, knowing our pitching is going to be better than their pitching.
At least match it, because they didn't. Gerrit Cole was the X factor there. If Gerrit Cole, depending on, they knew he was going to go three, he was going on 3 days rest, so that there was a cap there. Whereas they didn't have a cap. But at the end of the day, like they shut them down completely. So
they basically shut the Yankees bats down after game one. Giancarlo Stanton hit two home runs in game two off Tyler Glasnow. So, but like otherwise, the Yankees did nothing for the rest of the series offensively.
Yeah, I mean, game four there were runs scored, but again, not against guys that were.
What'd they win 4-2?
Yeah, I mean they scored enough runs to win that game.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is Chapman getting bitch slapped by Brusso and giving up for the second straight year a postseason ending home run. And now he's given up three of the biggest home runs in recent postseason history. One with the Cubs and then two with the Yankees. He's supposed to be this badass lockdown closer, like stares guys down. If you're going to throw at a guy's head in the regular season, it's kind of a tough look to give up a home run, postseason clinching series home run to him in October.
Oh, there's no doubt it's a tough look, especially throwing it to him.
And Chapman got punked by a team whose entire payroll is less than his contract. Now, I'm not saying Chapman sucks, because he's still a good pitcher and he still had a good postseason. He just got beat by Brusso. It's a solo home run. Normally, solo home runs don't beat you, but in this case, it did. But I'm just really, I don't know what my point is, other than Chapman's basically gotten punked 2 years in a row, and he's supposed to be this big bad, intimidating closer, and he's not intimidating anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's you take those away, and he's been extremely good still.
You can't take them away.
I know.
What are you talking about? You can't take them away.
You can't take them away. I know that. But the thing is like the other at-bats, like he came in and pitched really well.
I know that.
I don't know.
How many years in a row is he going to give up? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's been a very effective pitcher. I'm not saying get rid of Aroldis Chapman. I'm not saying that. I'm just pointing out for as high profile of a guy as he is, supposed to be one of the most intimidating relievers in baseball?
I mean, there's no doubt. He's a lefty that throws 101 miles per hour, looks like a giant out there, doesn't really say much, has that stare. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. I think in the moment,
back-breaking dramatic home runs in the postseason that bounced his team from the playoffs.
I think that, I don't know if the players think that. I think that there's a persona there that he puts off, but you could clearly tell that the Rays wanted to beat him badly. Like there was ulterior motivations there. And then Altuve, whether he got the sign or not, is just, he was an MVP. So those isolated moments, when you look at the MVP, the fact of all the things that happened in the year for the Astros, you could look at that and say that those were moments that are hard to, just put a whole blanket statement on Chapman not being a good.
Like, I'm not saying that.
Would you rather have Chapman out there, or another closer in the bigs right now? I don't even know who's doing a better job than him. If you look at the grand scheme of things, not many. Yeah, if there's a handful, maybe there's two or three guys, but not there aren't very many guys that are more effective.
No, I agree. I agree. I said that. I don't think he's a bad closer. He's going to be here for the rest of his Yankees contract, and I'm fine with that because he's still effective. I'm just pointing out that he's given up big time home runs. That's all I'm pointing out.
Thanks. I was there for those.
and next year, no one's afraid on the other side when Aroldis Chapman comes out of the
game. I don't think anybody's afraid in the big leagues in any moment. I think fans make that narrative.
Yeah. And this isn't fair to compare him to the
Maybe he needs to throw in a little bit more often, to be honest.
Yeah, it's tough in a situation. Obviously, he wasn't going to throw in on... He wasn't going to hit Brousseau or
anything. I'm not saying
like
throw... I'm not saying
Chapman hit him. Doesn't have the control to in a one-run game or a tie game, be throwing inside because you risk plunking a guy.
Yeah, that's why you don't do it in that moment. You establish that thought in the back of their mind that... throughout the season, different moments.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe he needs to really just embrace this villain role and start throwing on the inside. I think throwing on the inside is a lost art personally in baseball. I'm not saying hit people. I'm saying establish your dominance on the mound and not having them so comfortable. Guys are laying out over the plate with armor on their, they have, nobody cares because they have, ever since Bonds had that like shield on his elbow, everybody has them now. They have a bionic arm, everybody. So who cares if they're Josh Donaldson is like half his body is over the plate. I would throw inside and get these guys off the freaking plate, especially when you throw 100 miles per hour.
Chapman did that. He threw at Brousseau's head 100 miles an hour. And in the postseason, Brousseau stood in there, dug in, had a 9-pitch at bat and took him deep.
Yep. You're right. He had no fear. Because he was so
angry,
enraged with like, I'm gonna have my payback right now. If I get hit in the middle of it, that's fine because we're gonna fight.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna be laying on the ground. But this is where I am. I'm going in.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time,
and there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. And I've used this before to hire. Let me tell you, $75, you're probably going to get your candidate. You're going to get a ton of candidates with that amount of credit. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
The wait is finally over, guys. Football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every single possible chance to win the season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert.
All right, the annual season-ending press conference. We're getting all too used to it. I think the Yankees are getting too good at it, frankly, because it's just a lot of non-talk, a lot of words without a lot of meaning by Boone and Cashman, specifically Cashman. He's the master at saying words without really saying anything concrete. Do you want to start with Steinbrenner's interview?
Yeah, let's go in chronological order because that happened first.
So, I don't know. That wasn't a ton to take away from that interview. He did say Aaron Boone will be back. That's just a fact, which we knew anyway. So everyone crying for Buck Showalter, it's just not going to happen. He said our objective to win the World Series. We didn't even come close to that. Doesn't make the whole season a failure. I thought it was interesting. You know, Steinbrenner on Tuesday says we didn't even come close. And then Boone talks a billion times in his press conference about how close this team is. We're right there. We're such a close team. It's like, well, you haven't made the World Series yet. You just got beat in the ALDS, not even the ALCS. I don't know. Stop talking about how close you are.
Yeah, it's really out of touch. The fact that he's saying that with a smirk on his face is bothering me. How about we take ownership that you didn't actually get close and recognize that so that it's a little bit more of a priority instead of saying that we were this close, you know, a couple of balls here and there, and then we're in the World Series. Well, no. You had to win another series also in order to get to that point. So you were not close. It's a crazy, that's like the Oakland A's saying, we were close. I mean, Bill, that's a Billy Bean comment. That is a Billy Bean comment.
I lost my train
of
thought.
Go back to Hal Steinbrenner on K-Show actually saying that they were not. They fell short. He did say something about the season in general, about taking positives away, but they lost the objective. The objective was to win a World Series. The objective was failed, but they can't say that the entire season was failed because there were positives along the way, was his narrative.
Yeah, fine, whatever. And Brian Cashman reiterated that too, because he's talking about how, we need to get there. We need to have a shot in the postseason. That's my goal. And then you take tough losses when you get there every year. So I'd have no regrets there. He's talking about, and I think this is an organizational philosophy, is that the baseball playoffs are a bit of a crapshoot, and all you can do is maximize your chances to get there and get into the tournament. And while I agree, the baseball playoffs are a bit of a crapshoot, just having that philosophy is not a way to win. You can't just enter the lottery every year and that be your financial plan. You can't bank on retirement winning Powerball. It's just not going to probably.
I mean, that's a little disingenuous. The way that you're saying that is, it means that you're buying a one single ticket and praying to God that it happens. That's not what's happening here. They're still setting themselves up with a roster that they believe is a championship roster. They're spending money in areas that they believe will shore up these holes and give them the best opportunity once they are through the to get through the postseason and to now line themselves up for a playoff spot. So yes, first thing to do, check the box, got to the tournament. Now where are we? Okay, well, we have made these decisions not only to get through the regular season, but now we believe that these decisions will put us in the best position and give us a very good opportunity to now be the last team standing.
I know. I'm making a point with the lottery analogy. But now 53% of the league makes the playoffs. I think that's going to stick. So is it really even an accomplishment to make the playoffs anymore? You're in the top half of the league. The Yankees, if it weren't for the expanded playoffs this year, would not have made the playoffs.
Right. No, I think different decisions would have been made as well, but no, it's not necessarily an accomplishment, but it's a necessity. So you gotta get into that position so that you're now in a short series. Mm-hmm. The Yankees have prioritized home field advantage in the past. They've prioritized health. They've prioritized these things that, you know, ultimately actually had nothing to do with anything to do with the outcome. Home field advantage. Oh, we lost all of our home games. Health. Oh, we fell short and now we weren't. We had to go to, play on the road. It's just like, okay, just play your game and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. And then the other thing Steinbrenner said is that the team has sustained significant losses more than any other team in baseball, obviously due to the COVID season, no fans in the stands, etc. I don't doubt that they have struggled financially compared to other years. Whether you want to argue how much money they actually lost or didn't lose, if they just made less money, I don't know. We're never going to see the balance sheet, and we don't have enough information to figure out what their actual bottom line is. All I know is I don't think fans, and I certainly don't want to hear Hal Steinbrenner, billionaire, talk about how much of a struggle his business has been this year.
I mean, I don't think he was really, when you see the transcripts and you see all the text, it doesn't really say the exact tone of what he was saying. He kind of was answering questions and was
talking
about it. I'm going to
make it that
tone. Yeah, I know you are.
I'm going to turn it into that tone.
I think Hal Steinbrenner's press conference.
Interview. It wasn't a press conference.
Interview, I mean, was fine.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He didn't like piss me off in the things that he was saying.
No.
Boone on the other
hand. Boone pissed me off with the close talk because...
There wasn't even one time that he brought it up. Like he continuously brought it up about being close.
He said it 1,000
so
times, and they haven't made the World Series. So until you make the World Series, you can't be close, because guess what? You're not even playing in the series that decides the trophy.
He kept saying being so close to the last team standing. I'm like, how do you even get to that thought bubble to actually have that come out of your mouth when you just lost in the ALDS? I don't understand.
Because I think they're a bit delusional. And they think because on, according to them, on paper, their roster has the most talent, that makes them the closest to the last man standing. They believe in their mind, we have the right pieces in place. We're following our methodology. How many times did Cashman talk about, we ran it through the process, talking about the game two situation, and he came prepared for that game two question. He came with numbers about how many times Hap has started in the playoffs versus pitched in relief in the playoffs, about Devi Garcia versus Hap's matchup numbers with the Rays. He knew that question was coming. It was obvious it was coming, and he was ready for it. But while my team provided Aaron Boone and his coaching staff with all of the necessary information, and he ran it through the process, and I'm comfortable with the decision that Aaron Boone and the coaches made, and I never have instructed Aaron Boone to do one thing or the other. So they believe they're following the right process, and they think that their process will eventually yield them a World Series. So that in their minds, they think they're close.
I'm wondering what happens if Brian Cashman presents this information, endorses this information as a solid plan. And then Aaron Boone says, nah.
Well, according to Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone is not a puppet, which I thought was the funniest moment of the press conference. He actually said that word.
He's a real boy.
So let me get this straight. Brian Cashman, puppet master, says Aaron Boone, puppet, is not a puppet. Got it. So I think it's just hilarious that the reporters, and shout out to Lindsay Adler and Mark Carrig and Brian Hoke. I think all three of them and Joel Sherman all asked questions about Aaron Boone not having final say in any of decisions. I don't know if any of them actually used the word puppet. Brian Cashman used the word puppet, but they just came out and asked it. They asked Boone it and they asked Cashman it. Boone to bite his tongue, because it's just, he's being disrespected to his face over Zoom. He's being disrespected by these people. Like, hey, there's a common narrative here, Boone, that you don't have any say in your team. What's your opinion on that? Please explain yourself. Like, this is a big deal, I think, that the manager of the New York Yankees is being asked directly why he doesn't have any power, and if he doesn't have any power, and the GM is asked, hey, are you just controlling the puppet strings of your manager?
Isn't this inherently going to be the narrative when you have a analytics-focused approach to the decisions that you're making and the personnel that you're making? At its core, it's taking decisions out of people's brains and putting them in the numbers.
Well, is that the narrative with Kevin Cash? Because the Rays are very analytically driven.
The Rays are also analytically driven in the way that they train, and they have some of those, like, you know how we went over the different nerds? They also have some of, like, the cool nerds who approach some of these guys that are like rehab guys and come out of absolutely nowhere throwing 100 miles per hour and effective. Like, they have ways of doing things that are a little bit deeper than just saying, okay, well, this guy is a really good matchup in this moment, and this guy is a good matchup in this moment. We got to do this because now we're going to get tricky and the numbers say we can. They have a different little, their algorithm's different. MySpace and Facebook weren't the same.
Do the two Tampa Bay Rays reporters and the 9 fans of the Tampa Bay Rays, let's get Kevin back on the podcast, the Tampa Bay Rays podcast guy. Does anyone think Kevin Cash is a puppet? I think it's part of mentality. It's about how you conduct yourself. Aaron Boone was brought in here with no managerial experience, given the keys to a damn Lamborghini. Okay? And here you go, kid. You don't even have your learner's permit. Here's the Lambo. Don't speed. Stay in between the lines.
No, don't drive. Here's your Lambo,
right?
And here's the regulator. Here's the machine that's going to drive it for you. It's called AI. Call her whatever, you know, name it.
So maybe it's a Tesla with self-driving.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So I think it's part of the mentality.
Make sure your hands are on the wheel so it looks like you're driving.
10-2, or is it now 9? Isn't it now 9-6 or something?
I don't know what they're teaching.
Or it would be 4-6.
I don't know.
Anyway, so I think part of it is how Boone conducts himself.
That's just like that's an elbow injury waiting to happen.
It's underneath.
6 is on the bottom.
Okay, so it's 4-7.
Okay,
for the airbags, it's part of how Boone was brought in here. And I think there's a narrative because of how he was brought in and his mentality and how he deals with the media and how he responds to questions and how he never really stands up for himself, with the exception of the Savages rant. But I don't know how many times I have to talk about this. Kevin Cash threatened Aaron Boone and his team, and all Aaron Boone could say is that's scary.
I mean, that's a personality thing too, though. You know what
personality plays into this puppet.
Fine.
He is a very... He's
a media guy. A media guy. He's a relationship media guy.
So that's what plays into the
guy.
Puppet. You've got this persona of him that he doesn't have a backbone, and I think that plays into it.
Possibly.
People think Boone doesn't have a backbone, so of course they're going to think that he's being controlled by Brian Cashman, the vice president and general manager of the Yankees. This is Brian Cashman's team, and he hired a guy with no managerial experience and no backbone to manage the team. So that's going to be the persona. That's going to be the narrative until Aaron Boone wins, frankly, because we keep seeing him make weird decisions that an ordinary baseball manager probably wouldn't make. And then when he is, I think, making decisions, he's not making the right ones. He's pinch hitting Mike Ford in a situation that doesn't really make sense. And he made sure to talk about Castillo having a good splits against righties just to make sure, hey, I didn't make that decision willy-nilly. I actually looked at my spreadsheet before I made that decision.
I mean, I think he believes that he was making a decision that was beneficial in that moment or had more positives than negatives. I just disagree with it. the fact that you're entering with a player that hasn't done jack shit in a year. So, yeah. Anyway, no, look, he does have to squash the narrative, but it's going to have to be done with action and not talking. That's the part of the problem. He's talked too much. Yeah. He's talked himself into this puppet role because of the way he talks.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that was like a major takeaway from it. Like I said, the close thing was really annoying. What were some of the other major takeaways from, I mean, obviously they talked about Gary Sanchez. They say they still believe in him, but it's certainly a question if he's going to be the starting catcher next year.
Yeah, because this is kind of what I was thinking. Like, there's going to be a competition. Gary Sanchez is probably going to walk into the season as the starting catcher. And then if he plays the way he does, it'll be a shorter leash and he'll lose the job earlier.
Yeah.
That's what I think will happen.
Gleyber Torres, they talked about how he needs to get better defensively at shortstop. They believe he's better defensively at shortstop. I thought Domingo Herman's name came up a bunch for...
It came up with Hal a lot. Hal really leaned into that one, saying that he's just basically made some horrific decisions. It was a horrific incident. He's got to be convinced that Herman has turned a new leaf, has, you know, is truly, truly apologetic and for what happened, and is a new person, basically.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's not going to be on the team.
The team is worried about public perception, but also they have Aroldis Chapman on the team, so... But do you think Domingo Herman is being overinflated, like his actual impact on the team?
I don't think it's really roster? No, I don't think it's been.
But his name always gets brought up, like, oh, if they had Domingo Herman this year, maybe they wouldn't have had to do an opener in game.
I mean, I don't think it's been brought up that much. It's been brought up occasionally, but
it brought up a bunch.
It's too hard
since
to. It's too hard to identify what that impact. He's been gone for so long, so.
And also he had a really good first half of 2019 and a pretty shaky second half of 2019. It all netted out to like a mid 4 ERA pitcher. 4 ERA and I think a 4.7 FIP.
If you're a contrarian trying to find the reasons why the Yankees didn't win and you're leaning on Domingo Herman, you're freaking grasping for straws.
Well, yeah, and I see Brian Cashman believes that Luis Severino, other than Garrett Cole, Luis Severino and Clark Schmidt and Devi Garcia and Jordan Montgomery are the foundation for a good starting rotation.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's...
I'm
happy that he's saying that about some of the younger guys, because that's kind of what I want for next year. I don't want them to walk in with washed up veterans where we know what we're getting. I want a little bit of an unknown on the younger side. Give me that has talent.
If they walk into next year with those guys in the rotation, and Severino's probably not even going to be back until the summer, Brian Cashman said could be June, could be July, could be sooner. So if they walk into next year's starting rotation with Garrett Cole, like for opening day, Garrett Cole, Devi Garcia, Jordan Montgomery.
No. They're not walking in with those guys. Clark Schmidt's going to start probably in AAA. Devi Garcia very well might start in AAA. Those are guys that have the ability to be flexible with them. So that's a huge, huge positive for you. You go out and you get one more starting pitcher, and you know, maybe one of those guys is up. But you don't need to rely on them in the very, very beginning of the season.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you go out and try to get an impact arm.
Trade or free agent?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to see James Paxton back. And frankly, I don't want to see Tanaka back.
We're doing
our GM plans. When did we say
right
we're going to do
the
this?
World Series.
So the World Series, as soon as the World Series is over, we're going to have these, and we're going to do that episode just so that nothing happens, and we know that there's a key decision being made with Britain after the World Series, a couple of days after the World Series as well. So I don't want to get too much into to telling you what I'm thinking, but I mean, you pretty much know what I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, I think you say you don't want to see Tanaka or Paxton back. I definitely don't want to see Paxton back, because I think you're just going to be relying on a guy that gets injured far too often. And if Tanaka's your number five starter next year and he is relied on to be a number five starter, I'd be okay with that. But if he's relied on to be a two or a three next year, he's just not that anymore. He's not good enough for that anymore.
You have in the notes here, I didn't see the storyline actually, that Tanaka is apparently getting interest in receiving an offer in Japan for a $20 to $25 million per year return.
Yeah, from his old team. What are they? The Rakuten Golden Eagles? Isn't that it?
I don't know how you
if he gets 20 if he gets 20 to $25 million from Japan, like you the Yankees aren't going to offer him that.
Hell no. If they do, someone's getting slapped in the face publicly on TV.
If he wants to take $14 million from the Yankees for a 2-year deal, yeah, sign him back and have him be the number 5 starter. But if he's going to get $25 million, if he's going to get a $25 million contract from Japan to go back to his old team, Thanks, Tanaka. It was a really fun 7 years.
I'm sure the Angels needed another veteran pitcher to that's past their prime to sign.
Yeah, but see, with once a guy goes over to America and does well, like Tanaka, on especially on the Yankees, you sign him back for $25 million a year. That's marketing.
You mean for Japan,
for the Golden Eagles?
Oh yeah. No. He's a hero back there. So yeah, it's different. It's a different play.
The top player,
plus it's different talent. Like, he may go over there and have a phenomenal season.
The top player in their league makes $6 million a year.
Yeah, so there's different. Plus, isn't his wife is a pop superstar?
Yeah, I've never heard any of her songs though.
Would you know if you've heard them?
No.
So you get you align the power couple back in Japan.
I don't know. Do you think Tanaka still wants to? Do you think Tanaka would rather pitch for a MLB team, not the Yankees, or go back to Japan?
I don't know. I don't know what from his comments, the public comments about the end of the contract, it seemed to me that it was almost like a little bit of a closure thing for him.
Yeah,
trying to sacrifice like what could be his last start and make it a positive experience in the playoffs, because it wasn't good in the regular season, and now there's two of them that are both not good, so bad taste in your mouth. I don't know if that's something that he wants to correct, or he's just like gonna cut it and go somewhere else.
Well, I think if he's done with the Yankees in 5 years from now, we're not gonna necessarily remember Tanaka for his playoff performance. Well, first of all, people are excusing his Cleveland start because of the weather, and I think it's sort of like, not to compare these two, Jordan on the Wizards. No one remembers Jordan sucking in 2002.
It's a really, really bad example, because Jordan won multiple championships in the team before.
Okay, and I know. I said I'm not comparing the two. I just couldn't think of another analogy. Willie Mays on the Mets, right? Well, Willie Mays is also a Hall of Famer,
and it's also a different team. Yeah.
All I'm saying is, in 5 years from now,
people will remember the bulk of the positives and not the last. The and
yes,
yeah, I agree.
People will remember playoff Tanaka and his.
But at the same time, none of those playoff Tanaka moments landed in a championship. So
that's true.
They're not in New York Yankees lore.
So maybe he'll just be forgotten into the ether. Poof, gone.
Yeah, he could be. He could just. He's another guy that was on this team that didn't win. He was a piece of the puzzle that was a big
didn't
hype.
Fit.
Was a big hype.
Not fit.
And didn't pay the dividends.
Do you think,
not based off market value, based off of results?
Do you think the contract was worth it?
Well,
$150 million.
Yeah, because if you look at market value, yes, I think they got. It wasn't all on Tanaka's shoulders for them not winning by any means. But the result didn't happen, like you said. The combined powers that were, these guys are more powerful individually than they are as a unit, and I think that affected his tenure, because it could have been different early on. He pitched well enough early on.
His best seasons also were on the worst teams.
Yeah, exactly. That's a problem. Doesn't equate to championships.
So as far as the press conferences go, we got the nugget.
DJ LeMahieu is a big point, and basically they're talking about, oh, we're going to do what we do every year. We're going to look at this team,
evaluate this team.
We're going to evaluate the pieces and make appropriate decisions and offers where we deem necessary, and we'll feel good about that. Which has me worried.
Do you think they're setting up for a dry off season? Because Steinbrenner's talking about how they lost a ton of money, and Cashman and Boone are talking about how they need to have their process and evaluate and have the discussions on what we're going to do.
I don't necessarily think they're setting themselves up for something like that, because we've heard them say that they're not going to do much, or they'll the same narrative. It seems like they say the same thing every single year, and then all of a sudden they don't
want to play their hand.
They go out
2 years ago,
and then Giancarlo Stanton gets traded and
a trade Brian
between
Cashman
and Jeter happens.
Brian Cashman says that they're a fully operational Death Star, and then everyone thinks, oh, that means they're going to sign Bryce Harper, and then they don't even talk to his agent. So
yeah, so nothing means anything.
Do you see Sweeney Murdy wrote he wrote an article, or he did something where he basically was like, hey, Yankees, stop trying to be the Death Star. It blew up twice.
No, it's true. I mean, that's been something that's been pointed out early on. The Death Star actually wasn't a good thing, and the Rebels beat it. by finding their Achilles heel and just poking and poking and poking and poking until the goddamn thing blows up. And that's the strikeout.
Is it the strikeout or is it the starting pitching?
If you're looking at one thing, you probably look at that strikeout. The strikeout. The fact that you don't make any contact. The pitching is spread upon and like actually had some good moments in there from guys that you didn't expect.
So is Luke Skywalker Kevin Cash or is Luke Skywalker Rosarena or is it...
No.
Who's Luke Skywalker on the race?
The insert MLB team here. You know, it's just like whoever's up that year. The Rebels, just like all the new Star Wars, like there's different people. There have been different people fighting this. It's not it's not a long-term thing. You got little segments, little iterations of people who are beating you. But at the end of the day, they're still getting beat.
Yep. 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 All right.
I would much rather be the Rebel Force. Much rather be the Rebel Force.
Well, they win in the end. So yeah.
So can we do that? Skywalker is like a high-priced free agent. I'd say that the Rebel Force has a number of high-priced free agents.
No, Skywalker wasn't a free agent. He was a homegrown talent.
He was a homegrown. Okay, fine. Well, you could go both ways on that. He chose the right path. But the thing is, there were high-priced free agents. Okay, when you look at the Rebel
Force, Han Solo is a high-priced free agent.
The Millennium Falcon just alone, you start adding in the guys that were on that ship. Those are high priced free agents. Those are good righty lefty compliments right there. You got Chewbacca.
Yeah.
And you got droids.
Who's Chewbacca?
And droids. Who's Chewbacca? And people that compliment them.
Well, droids are the nerds. Droids are the analytics department.
Well, no, because these droids actually do things. They're not just making decisions behind the scenes.
Who's C-3PO? Because get him out of there. He doesn't do shit. All right, that's enough Star Wars nerdery. Any other? Cashman said he thinks Stanton's future is at designated hitter. So great, we got our DH locked in until 2028. The balance thing, I already talked about how I think that the team needs to be more balanced, meaning the team needs to be more diverse.
It's a trap. That's game two. Yeah. Kevin Cash is like, go for it.
Yeah. No, go for it. It's not a trap, guys. Your trap. Oh, so your trap is J-Hap? Okay. You got me. Woo. Oh, man. What a stupid fucking decision.
Still didn't make a break.
Maybe not.
Looking back, it definitely didn't. After you see what Tanaka did, it did not.
But if Tanaka just starts game two,
it could be different. I mean, I could say that about a number of things. If that happened, because
they did score four runs off of Glasnow in five innings in game two.
How many runs did Tanaka give up?
Four.
Okay.
So it's a tie game in the fifth inning. If you just equal the performances in the different games. You're probably right, but
the Rays also might deploy a different pitching staff. At that point, too. I mean, the series definitely changes, or it has the potential to change.
So, do you have any predictions on World Series? Who do you think it's going to be? Rays versus Dodgers or Braves?
I could see the Dodgers coming back and winning that series.
Yeah, it's 2-1, and they just scored a bunch of runs.
Yeah, I mean, you look at talent.
I guess that would be interesting because Friedman used to be with the Rays, right? The Dodgers GM. Andrew Friedman?
Yeah, I believe so.
So he'd be facing his old team.
I think right now, when you take away the names and the team that's playing the best and is probably the best unit, it's the Rays, and their pitching is a difference maker.
Especially if they're going to get some rest in the World Series, because there are off days in the World Series, then they don't even have to use those lesser bullpen arms. They come every night with those elite bullpen arms.
Yeah, I think the Rays have a very good opportunity to win the World Series this year. And it's a perfect
year for them to
win the World Series, to quarantine.
People making that point where it's like, oh, the Rays are only able to be this good right now because their pitching is not tired out from the regular season. Do you agree with that?
I don't think that's necessarily fair. I think they have so much depth that you could also argue the fact that their depth would carry them through as well. And they were hit with a lot of injuries. People forget that, yeah. I think, when they talk about the Rays. Like, not only are they deep and talented as they stand, but they were also hit with injuries.
If the Braves win a World Series, it would kind of be ironic because the last time they won a World Series was also in a shortened season.
There's your storyline.
Not many people are going to care about that.
On the baseball side of things, I wouldn't mind. I would probably rather watch Braves Rays personally than Rays Dodgers. I'm sick of seeing the Dodgers. I don't want to see Mookie Betts in the World Series either. Like, to me,
why?
I just don't.
What has Mookie Betts ever done to the Yankees?
I just don't.
Okay.
I don't have a reason. I don't want to see it. Aesthetically, that's not pleasing
to
me.
Well, guess what? I'm not going to watch any of it because baseball insists on starting some of these games at 8:40 at night.
The fact that the Braves have like these really young, talented guys that are definitely playing, you know, a little ahead of their time, I'd say. Or maybe it's pretty close to on schedule.
Yeah, they've been on in the playoffs 3 years in a row, right?
All right, so it's on schedule. You see a lot of young talent here. I think it'd be fun.
Indulge me for a second. Baseball starting the Rays-Astros games at 8:40 at night. Do they even want anyone to watch?
Well, nobody watches in Tampa.
But if you're trying, you have
to play to the markets. You have to play to the markets.
You have to give the
and Tampa's market doesn't
chance
give a shit.
To watch. You have to give them a chance to watch.
But if you're a Rays fan and you're, I mean, I guess, yeah, you want to, ideally, you definitely want to give them an opportunity to watch. I don't know what.
8:40 at night is ridiculous.
There's something telling them that the Rays television numbers are just abysmal, probably.
If it was Yankees Astros, what time would those games be? They'd be at 8:40 at night. You realize that?
No, they would not be.
I think they would be.
I disagree.
Because they want to spread out these games. Because again, baseball thinks they're the NFL and people sit down at 4 o'clock to midnight watching playoff baseball. No one does that.
No, they would not be at 8:40 if they were Yankees Astros. They would play to the East Coast. It's based on market, man. Houston is a big market. They're playing to Houston.
So it's 7:40 Houston time?
Yeah. It's fine.
So it would be at what, 8:05?
Why does TBS have to get weird with their numbers always? Why does it have to be like 8:35 or 7:40? Why can't they just use normal freaking...
All right. That's it. Next episode. When are we doing our next episode? Is it going to be Monday? Is it going to be...
Yeah, we'll get back on the Monday rotation.
Okay.
It'll be in a... We'll get some other things to talk about for Monday, but we'll get back on the Monday rotation.
For Monday's show, send in some mailbag questions because I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about if it's not mailbag questions. Although I'm sure I'll find something to bitch about.
Yeah, you will. That's a fact. We can make more of these Star Wars parallels. That was fun. I feel like it has some legs there too. My mind is still going now. I got some Lando comparisons. I got some some Ewok comparisons. There's some thing. We got some.
Hold on. Is Glaber the Ewok?
I can't give it up. We maybe talked about this
waddling around at shortstop.
Here's the big league tease for Monday. You may or may not get more Star Wars comparisons.
Awesome. We'll talk to you Monday. It'll be a great episode.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.